not coming to a theater near you. Films featuring strong female protagonists. Almost 30 years ago, Alison Bechdel wrote a comic strip that spelled out what is now known as the Bechdel test. To pass the test, a movie must meet three simple criteria. It must have at least two women in it. These two women must talk to each other, and what they discuss has to be about something other than a man. You may be surprised by just how many films, classics, blockbusters, and even art house films, fail the test. Today on Main Calling, we're going to talk about the Bechdel test and about the Blue Stocking Film Series, a festival that takes place here in Maine and showcases complex women characters in film. Of course, we'll want to hear from you. Should we pay attention to the Bechdel test? Which movies do you think pass the test? Pull up an aisle seat. Main Calling is next after these news headlines. From the MPBN studios, I'm Susan Sharon, and this is Main Calling. Time for a pop quiz. Name a movie, old, new, classic, or blockbuster, it doesn't matter, that features the following: two female characters who talk to each other about something other than a man. Okay, time's up. What did you come up with? It's not as easy as it sounds, is it? Today we're going to learn about the so-called Bechdel test and about a film festival taking place in Maine that features films that pass the test. We'll also talk about some of the movies making news this summer and the state of the movie industry. With me in the studio, Mary Poles. She's a feature writer for the Portland Press Herald and Maine Today. She's also a not entirely reformed movie and book critic. And also with me, Kate Kaminsky. She's a screenwriter, director, and independent filmmaker whose films have screened all over the world. In 2011, Kaminsky founded the Blue Stocking Film Series, Maine's only women in film event. We invite you to join our conversation. What's the last movie you saw that had a woman in a leading role? Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address is talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. So before we go to the phones, Kate and Mary, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the Bechdel test right off the bat. We mentioned it at the beginning of the program, but Kate, let me start with you. Why is it important to you?
Because it elevates women's conversations. It really basically asks the viewer to see how few real conversations, substantive conversations, take place between women in terms of storyline. So it's all about women's stories within any film. And there are so many films that have male protagonists leading the story and driving the action that those stories often are just an afterthought. So
now, the test doesn't make, we don't have to have highbrow conversation between the two women. It's pretty simple. Does that matter?
I think it matters. So it doesn't test quality. Does not test quality.
Doesn't test feminism.
Nope, not at all.
It tests the marketplace, I think. It tests our culture.
Definitely.
Yeah, explain what you mean by that, Mary.
Well, you know, it's such a simple little test, right? You hear it and you think, well, of course, there's got to be just like thousands upon thousands of movies like that. And then you start breaking a movie down and you realize how very rare it is. You know, you think, okay, well, there are always women talking in movies, right? I mean, walking and talking. But they do tend to be talking about the male characters. And whether it's a love relationship. I mean, I think you're going to quiz listeners in a little while. Sometimes it might be, you know, maybe they're talking about a man who is the son of one of them. And you know.
And that doesn't pass?
That does pass. I mean, if it would pass if they were talking about something other than a son. So if they're just even talking about the men in their life that aren't necessarily their romantic partners, that hangs you up. And I think it's just, you know, when I first heard of it, Alison Bechdel, she's a graphic novelist and a feminist. And she's not a filmmaker. She's not someone who should, in theory, have presented this little test that would give us all pause. But she has. And I think it's just brilliant. And it's been around for a while now.
Yeah. And I love the joke that ends the strip, the original strip, that it that it appeared in, because it's two women walking down the street and they're about to go to the movies, and the one says to the other, "Yeah, I have this rule, I only go to see films where there are two more women who talk to each other about something other than a man, and I haven't seen anything since Alien." And that's the joke. So it's a great joke, and it really hits home because you just think, "Oh, when was that? When I saw that?"
Well, okay, before we go to our first caller, let me ask you both, what's a favorite film that passes the test for each of you? Kate, what's one you like?
Recently, I saw Belle, and I thought it was marvelous. Ama Asante is the filmmaker. It's a British film, and it's just beautiful. And it's a really great film. Very romantic, really wonderful.
Extensive conversation with women?
Definitely.
Mary, how about you?
Well, I'm going to go to a classic just because I thought a lot about this film in relation to this issue, and that's Thelma and Louise. I interviewed Susan Sarandon last summer when I was writing a piece about the only female lead movie that came out, mainstream movie, which was The Heat. And so I interviewed Susan Sarandon about her Thelma and Louise experience. What she said to me was, we thought at the time that everything was going to change, that they were going to be, doors opening because of how successful this movie was that featured, yes, they talk about a man. They talk about Brad Pitt and his abs, as they well should. but they also talk about some other stuff, too. So that's a very mainstream example of something that passes the Bechdel test with flying colors.
And what year was that?
91, I think. Am I right?
Yeah.
And the Bechdel test came out in 85?
That's correct, yeah.
All right. We're going to go to our first caller, who is Brian from Harpswell. Brian, before I take your question, I want to ask you one. Are you there?
Sure. Hi.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question whether you think this movie passes the Bechdel test or not. Are you ready?
Sure.
Halloween. Pass or fail?
No, I would say that is a pass because she succeeds in the end. Jamie Lee Curtis does not die.
You are correct. Very good. Very good job, Brian. So go ahead with your question.
All right. Well, it wasn't really a question. I had a movie that I thought might pass your test, and that is actually Kill Bill Volume 1 by Quentin Tarantino, because there's more than one scene where Uma Thurman has a conversation as well as a fight, being very strong, and neither of these conversations or fights have anything to do with a man, but yet just a grudge between the two women.
All right. I'll turn to the guests. Yes.
It's a pass.
It's a pass.
It's a pass, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like I feel great about that movie and what it represents for women, but, yes, it's a pass.
Did you particularly like that film, Brian, or what's the point you're raising about there?
Just hearing you guys' conversation, it was just the first movie that popped into my mind. I just wanted to share it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
1-800-393-5566. 1-800-393-5566. That's the number to call to join this conversation about the Bechdel test and about women in film. Let me ask you this. It seems there are a lot of films lately with strong female protagonists, but when you think about them, they don't. There are female protagonists, but they aren't necessarily talking to another female character. Are we seeing? And I'm thinking of a film like Gravity, for example, that Sandra Bullock carries the film, but she doesn't talk to any other women. And she's complex.
There's only two characters in it, and then a voice from Houston. There's not a lot of opportunity there. Kate, we disagree about Gravity, don't we?
Well, I don't know. For me with Gravity, I didn't think she was that strong, actually. I felt her complexity, if there was any, was really related to the story that we were discussing about her having lost a child.
Yeah,
but she has to ask for help all the time in that movie. Like, I feel like she should know how, what she's doing. Like, why did they send her up there if she didn't know what she was going to do? I just felt like she wasn't necessarily actually a really strong character.
She wasn't very complicated.
She was no Sigourney Weaver.
There you go.
But she did, she figured a lot of things out. And she was supposed to be a scientist who was on a research trip rather than, the classic astronaut. But she, what Kate and I were talking about, has she speaks about her dead child. That's sort of her motivator, and I think that's a sort of classic. You know, what is a woman sad about? You know, a dead child or a romance or something like that. And why does she have to be sad? Why couldn't she just be a scientist floating in space doing cool research with a happy family at home? You know, she has to have this weird motivating factor that I think is very Hollywood.
And why does she have to sort of be flirting with dead George Clooney?
Well, I can't fault her there. I don't know.
Mary, you mentioned Sigourney Weaver, which is what the reference to Alien.
Yeah.
And that was 1978, so it's before the Bechdel test. It does pass the Bechdel test, but give an example. Why do you like that film? Why do you mention Sigourney Weaver coming out of that one?
Well, that character was originally written for a man, right?
Yes, I think it was.
That character was originally written to be a man.
Yeah.
So it's really cool.
So was Sandra
Just think
Bullock's,
what could
though.
Happen. Like, you could do so many. Think of all the remakes you could make. Just putting women
like
in the
seven?
Lead,
yeah.
in the leading role instead of a guy.
Do you know why they then cast it at first Sigourney Weaver as a woman?
I don't remember the story, but I feel like in Gravity it was Sandra Bullock's character was supposed to be a man too. You know,
I think they should just do that more often.
Well, yeah. I mean, is that progress
Stay
right
open.
There that they're turning these lead characters over to women? Is
there's
that
no,
progress?
There's absolutely no progress. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry to say that, but there is no progress.
I'm with Mary.
There's actually a decline. And you know, I haven't been a movie critic since last October when I came to work at the Press Herald. And I haven't been to very many movies since then. And in part because I feel like it's just, you know, it's been turned over to this sort of boy teen demographic, and you know, God love them, that those movies aren't particularly interesting to me. I do, however, take my child to movies, and I'll say something that passed the Bechdel test that's out in theaters now, sort of oddly enough, is a Disney movie, Maleficent. There are lots of conversations in that movie between Maleficent, played by Angelina Jolie, and the little girl, who's played by Elle Fanning. And you know, they're talking about many more things, fairies.
Well, and you know, honestly, I saw, if you want to talk about a summer blockbuster that wastes an incredible talent, let's talk about Godzilla. Here's Juliette Binoche, and this is a waste of an amazing actor who I would want to see carry that entire film. But
and that film fails the Bechdel test.
Yes.
That's the classic blockbuster, which I guess gets to the point Mary's making, which is they'll spend a lot of money, they'll make it a blockbuster, but for some reason they are not including half the population, women, in the films.
And there's a lot of anxiety about it. When I did that same interview I was talking about last year about The Heat, I talked to the director, Paul Feig, who said he was extremely anxious. Now, he's made a number of very successful movies. There's really no reason why he should be anxious, but he spoke to the fact that having two female leads, Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock, was something that, you know, producers would be nervous about. And they're huge. They were, you know, Oscar winner, Oscar nominee, well-liked. You know, there's nobody who has a higher appeal rating than Sandra Bullock, you know.
How did that movie do?
Oh, that movie did quite well.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't do, you know, if you substituted for those two actors, if you substituted Sylvester Stallone and I don't know, Samuel L. Jackson, it probably would have gotten bigger box office, I think.
Well, you could have actually interchanged two guys for those characters anyway. I thought they were really portrayed in a way that was unrealistic as women. I didn't find them realistic. But, you
well,
know.
Well, no,
no. No, not at all.
No. I mean, the thing
fun,
is, it's but funny because, you know, I felt like going into that movie, I really wanted to like it, you know, because I do feel like, my God, what's happening? Why are our opportunities to see ourselves on screen dwindling at such an alarming rate? And then I walked out thinking, oh, God, maybe I laughed once. But I will say that the audience around me was so very responsive. They were so there with them. And I thought, well, you know, here's the lesser of two evils, right? I mean, at least people were going to see it and they weren't walking out saying, God, I wish there had been some more men in that movie, you know?
We have a question from someone, Bernice, who is asking via our Facebook page if A League of Their Own passes the Bechdel test.
Oh, I would hope so.
Otherwise, they just have to be talking about Tom Hanks over and over again, right?
I think they talk about baseball or softball or something.
Yeah, yeah. I have a note from our producer that it does pass the test, which would be surprising if it didn't. But Mary, to your point about, you know, you said earlier that you actually think that women are going backward in the film industry, that there's actually less progress. Why do you say that?
Well, you know, there's these annual studies about women in film, and it will look at things like the number of directors who are women, the number of female leads. You know, I don't know that they test exactly to the Bechdel, but San Diego State University does an annual test. The Annenberg Center does an annual test, and it's just a steady decline. And this year it was really disheartening.
It was very disheartening to hear about 2013. I think it was 14% of protagonists are female on screen.
Was it that bad? I know that the number of women directors was, you know, it was like 28%, but that includes like every little movie that nobody's going to go see.
I think the true percentage is 6% of major studio releases are directed by women. So
right.
They fare better on the independent side for sure.
And you know, the other thing to that, I remember I was a movie critic in California in 2006 or 2007. I wrote a story about women directors and talked to people like Julie Delpy, who's a wonderful actress and who at that point was working on her first movie, 2 Days in Paris. And she desperately wanted to direct a science fiction movie. She says, I have interests that are so not girly movies, but I can only get funding to do romantic movies, romantic comedies. So that's what she did. And since then, she's done another 2 Days in New York and a movie called Skylab.
Is that the film with the 2 Days? Is that the film with Chris Rock?
Yes.
I loved that movie.
Oh, my God. I hated it. I don't know that we could go to the movies together.
I think we could because I love to talk about stuff with people who, you know, like, because I love to, because that's really invigorating to me to hear from other people, like, why'd you like it? Well, and here's why I didn't like it. And
well,
you know.
we are going to hear from some other people, but first we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to go to some more comments and questions. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Revision Energy. Now offering Own Your Power loans for solar energy systems, more at revisionenergy.com. Roosevelt Campobello International Park, across the bridge from Lubeck, now open for its 50th season. Learn more at fdr.net. And Maine's public universities. When you think about your future, think Maine. Learn more at think.maine.edu.
The new film Boyhood shows a 6-year-old boy and his older sister actually grow up. It's not a documentary, but a fiction film shot over the period of 12 years. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Richard Linklater, who wrote and directed the film. His other movies include Slacker, Dazed and Confused, School of Rock, Before Sunrise, and Bernie. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Thanks to all of you who entered the recent Life is Better with MPBN contest in May. You helped ensure the continuation of MPBN in the year ahead. The first place grand prize winner of the 2014 Nissan Juke S was Betsy Hood of Yarmouth, an MPBN Evergreen member. Congratulations to Betsy Hood, and many thanks to Lee Automalls and Lee Automalls Chairman Adam Lee for the generous support and commitment shown to MPBN. And of course, thanks to you. MPBN is truly a community effort. Thank you.
Well, there was this one tourist spot. And there was this donkey there that you could take pictures with. All these big fat tourists and their chubby kids would hop up on that poor thing, wearing their Hawaiian necklaces and sunglasses.
Has Gammy been to the hospital recently?
Yes, baby, lots of times. Now, won't you listen?
Oh, Lord, please help me make a yummy meal that Mama will love.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Susan Sharon. Today on the program, not coming to a theater near you. Movies where women have a leading role. With me in the studio is Kate Kaminsky. She's a screenwriter, director, and independent filmmaker, and the founder of the Blue Stocking film series. Mary Poles is a not entirely reformed movie book critic and author of Accidentally on Purpose. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Kate, we just played a clip that you selected. This is from a film that's going to be in your festival.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell us about it.
Well, it's directed by a young woman named Brittany Reber. It's from Texas, and the title of the film is The Rapture and Gammy Gwen. And it's about a group of family members, women, all women, who come together to help usher Gammy Gwen to the other side. And it is really funny. It is really wonderfully heartfelt, and it's just great. It's a great film. I'm so excited to show it. I'm really looking forward to it.
How many films in the festival, and how do you select?
Well, let's see. We are the only film event in the entire world that requires complex female protagonists for every film. And the films we're going to show, there are 14 films that we're going to show on July 18th and 19th, are really incredibly diverse in terms of genres and styles. Obviously we want the audience to judge for themselves whether entertainment is gender-based. We don't think it is, and we think they'll agree with that. But we select in the way most film festivals do. You know, you get a bunch of submissions and you ask people to help you judge, which we did. And we came up with this roster of really strong films. They're, like I said, they're incredibly diverse in terms of their look and their subject matters. So although there is a theme of mother-daughter running through some of them, and I love that because, you know, for every father-son film, there should be a mother-daughter story, right? So it's going to be a really great thing to present these films to Maine.
All right. Well, thank you. We've got a call from Fred, who seems to make a nice segue to what you're talking about here. Fred, you've got a question about the topic. Go ahead with your question, please.
Yes, hello to the panel. I just wanted to ask a question as I'm listening here, and I'm hearing that the sort of test that you guys are undertaking with the Bechdel test is, the types of films are as varied that fulfill this test as Kill Bill and Halloween, and we can't even necessarily agree on whether or not a movie like Gravity fits the bill. Why is this test important, if that is the case? Like, why would I care about this test if it's just creates such a list that's so varied? Why would I want to use this test? I'd love to see movies that have female characters in them, but this test seems a little bit clumsy to me.
The test just demonstrates a lack out there, something that's missing. That's all it is. It helps point it out to you. If you sit down and you take a list maybe of your top 10 movies and, you know, who knows, maybe there's a Godfather on there for you. But if you sit down and you go through that list and you consciously watch them and think about whether or not a conversation between two women about something other than a man is an important thing to represent in art and in life, and you find maybe you find that 9 out of 10 of your favorite films do pass the Bechdel test, but maybe you find that actually a shocking number of them don't. And then it's just to you to think about what that means in a larger way in our cultural, about a very subtle bias, which, you know, I guess maybe it's not such a subtle bias, is it?
Mm.
But you don't, it's just, it's a way, it's a litmus test to demonstrate what's out there and what's not out there.
And it's also not allowing women characters to have their own story. And I think that's where I began to really want to help to change that in some way, because I just, it's terrible to go to a movie and have, to waste these wonderful actors being the girlfriend or the evil seductress. There are any number of tropes or cliches that are really prevalent in the major releases, let's say. It's all about elevating the importance of women's conversations. That's really what it's about.
Because I bet the women in your life, they talk about more than just the men in their lives, right?
We are going to go to Margaret is going to tell us about this a little bit more. Margaret, do you have a question for the panelists?
Oh, I just have a comment. I've been listening to about since about 10 after the hour, and so I missed the very beginning. And I've been trying to tease out what is the Bechdel test, you know, what are the parameters. And I get a sense of a good deal of them, but I'm still kind of floating around there without a sense of certainty about really what the test says. It needs to be repeated, I think, because there's probably other people like me who are sort of hanging out there not sure exactly how to use this, you know, getting a few ideas, but I'd like to have it repeated if possible.
Sure.
I'll just take your answer off the
Okay, thank you so much. So we need a reminder of what the Bechdel test is, the three criteria.
Let's do it, Mary. Come on.
Okay, there are more than one woman in a film, so two women in a film,
and
at least two.
And they have to talk to each other.
And they can't be talking about just a man. So if what we if somebody had a camera on us and was making a movie about us right now, we would be so passing the Bechdel test.
So passing.
And it happened in 1985, and it's been used as a gauge. And there's actually a website that keeps track of the films that do pass and fail. And you can actually go to that website if you have a question about one of the films that we've talked about or something else that we haven't that you're just wondering about. You can go to BechdelTest.com. I think it has information for about 5,000 movies. Is that right?
Yes. And the Swedish, I don't know if anybody has brought this up yet, but the Swedes have actually initiated a rating system. And it's there's a new rating. It's called the A rating. And it actually tells consumers which films pass the Bechdel test. I'd love to see that.
First
come
the Volvo
here.
And then that.
I know, right? Yeah.
All right. We're going to go to Jack from Norway, who's been waiting for a few minutes. Jack, go ahead with your question.
Hi. Well, I was calling. I had two movies I was going to throw into the hat for the leading female character role.
Go ahead.
I was thinking The Prize Winner with Julianne Moore and Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah.
And so as movies that pass the Bechdel test, you mean?
That's what I was thinking. Both for two very different reasons, though. The Prize Winner, I was thinking because it portrays a female character in a very classic Americana role, but as a very strong character. And Little Miss Sunshine, because I couldn't quite tell who was the main character, which I found kind of satisfying, actually.
Well, that's a real ensemble piece. And interestingly enough, that movie is directed by a husband and wife directing team. So there is a woman director. And you know, every year when the Oscars roll around, I felt myself, I would always be writing some story and realizing, okay, so we've got a woman nominated for best screenplay, none in the director category. And in that case, Little Miss Sunshine, there was a movie that counted towards the sort of like, you know, the plus column for women because it was a husband and wife team that co-directed it. I am not familiar with the prize winner.
No,
but, you know, Julianne Moore. She is.
I'd watch her read the phone book.
One of the greatest. Absolutely.
Love her.
Jack, thanks for asking about those films. Before you go, I want to ask you a question since it sounds like you're pretty good about the Bechdel test. If I ask you a question about a film, tell me if you think it passed or failed. Ready?
Oh, sure thing.
Yeah. How about Avatar?
You mean the M. Night Shyamalan or the Blue Creatures?
No, not the Blue Creatures. James Cameron.
Oh, okay, yes. Well, it's been a while since I saw that. I would have to say, it reminds me a lot of almost a Pocahontas-type storyline, which I want to say yes, but I almost have to say no.
You would be correct. You would be correct. It failed. It failed, yes. Avatar failed. My understanding is, yes, it has female characters, but they never speak to each other. So
there's Sigourney Weaver. And then there's the lovely blue girl. And I was thinking that you could be slipping one by us because maybe the lovely blue girl, whose name I unfortunately don't remember, might have spoken to her mother about dinner or some such thing. Because it is a Jim Cameron movie after all.
Yeah, because mom has to cook. Just keep that mom in the kitchen.
Thank you so much for calling. All right, we're going to take a call from Pam in Brunswick. Pam,
yes,
are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Okay, how can an ordinary movie-going person support women having more substantial roles in movies?
Ah, I have an answer for that. You can go the first weekend that any film comes out that has a female protagonist or a woman director and plunk your money down for that movie. And there's actually a movement to do this. There are lots of people behind this idea because what it shows in the first weekend, you have to go the first weekend, no, Pam.
Okay.
Because what that does is those numbers get counted toward that film's box office. And the more box office a film earns, obviously in a commercial industry, the more likely that film is going to, you know, have some impact. So we can help influence that.
Because those films get yanked really quickly. Pam, who I believe is my friend from the dog park in Brunswick. They just don't linger. It's such a competitive business to get into a mainstream movie theater anyway. I mean, if you're going to the Evening Star downtown, you might see something like Blue Jasmine that hangs around for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, if it's out at the Hoyts, you've got to get out there the first weekend to be counted.
And bring a lot of friends.
Yes, bring a lot of friends.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Pam. She also reminds me of a very important point that I have not asked you yet, and that is really, what is fundamentally the reason that we aren't seeing more women talking to each other in these films or even more women in films? There are some theories about that. Why does the, you know, movie world still ignore half the population?
I think there's a lot of debate around it. I don't know that anybody knows the actual answer. I think entrenched culture, entrenched ideas about what sells is behind a lot of it.
Entrenched male leadership in the studios. There have been very few studio heads that are women. And then also within that, you know, they really look at who goes to the movies and they feed off that. It's this cycle.
And I don't even know. Do you know, Mary, about this woman who wrote an article, and it's been all around, so maybe you saw it, but this woman wrote an article about how she quit screenwriting because she went to UCLA Film School and she was taught there to not write female protagonists. They teach at, like, the big film, because UCLA is a pipeline directly to Hollywood.
It absolutely is, yeah.
And so they are literally taught not to write screenplays that pass the Bechdel test or feature female protagonists.
And what is the reason? Because they won't do well at the box office.
Because they won't be able to have a career.
You can't get them funded. I mean, all those women directors I talked to in 2006 for that story about female directors, I went back and looked at, they'd all had movies that had come out in 2006 or 2007, I guess, because that's when I wrote the story. But, you know, they were all eager to keep going. Some of them, the woman named Zoe Cassavetes, who's the daughter of Gina Rowlands and John Cassavetes, great filmmaker, great actress, she had just made a movie. And she said to me, you know, you get to a certain point, like you work up to being able to make a movie, and then it's kind of time to have a kid if you want to have a kid. And I looked, and all of these women that I interviewed then didn't make another movie again until 2013. And some hadn't made any at all since then.
Yeah, the industry is not welcoming to people who leave and want to come back.
Yeah, and you think about somebody like, you know, the film George Washington by David Gordon Green? Very beautiful, lyrical, independent little film that didn't make any money, really. That guy, they hired him to make all these huge movies, you know, like Your Highness, and, you know, things that have actually done really well at the box office. But you don't see those women directors who actually get a film made. You don't see them getting that chance to go mainstream after that and become the kind of brand that can really influence Hollywood.
I think Kimberly Pierce got Carrie, and, you know,
yeah,
it's,
and
that yeah, was a, what's that she going to get choice. Next? You know, it's like it's you just hope that she'll get something else because she's so great.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take another short break. And when we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Orthopedic Institute of Central Maine, committed to regaining mobility and getting rid of the pain, jointsme.org. Casella, handling over 1 million pounds of recyclables daily in the state of Maine, Casella, giving resources new life. And Androscoggin Bank's Main Street Foundation, now accepting applications for the 25K for Kids Award, mainstreet-foundation.org.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, former U.S. Senators Olympia Snowe and Tom Daschle, Republican and Democrat, take on Washington's epic gridlock That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Tune in for On Point this evening at 11. And join us this afternoon at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling for Speaking in Maine. We'll head to Northport and the Midcoast Forum on Foreign Relations for a talk by Stephen Kinzer, author of the recent bestseller, The Brothers John Foster and Alan Dulles and Their Secret World War. That's Speaking in Maine, following Maine Calling, here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Susan Sharon, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, where are the movies that feature women who do more than talk about men? With me in our studio, Kate Kaminsky is a screenwriter, director, and independent filmmaker. She and partner Betsy Carson have produced more than 25 films. Kate also is the founder of the Blue Stocking Film Series. Mary Poles is a feature writer for the Portland Press Herald and Maine Today. She's also a not entirely reformed movie book critic. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to take a call right now from Elaine in Surrey, who's been patiently waiting. Please go ahead, Elaine.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Earlier in the program, someone had mentioned women's films regressing, and I immediately thought of Bridesmaids, which my husband and I were so aghast was celebrated in any way as a female-made film. And I just don't think it's any kind of progress for women to be making films that are like Farrelly Brothers films. And we just thought it was just the trashiest, oh gosh, unfunniest thing. And I would like to hear you discuss this. I'm going to go now. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd love to discuss that. And this raises another issue. I'm sorry that I have to disagree with you, but I really loved Bridesmaids. It was really fun. But I'll tell you something. At the time when it came out, I was a movie critic for Time, and I worked with a male colleague, Richard Corliss. And, you know, I tended to get if there was a movie that was about women or maybe directed by a woman or sort of, you know, fringy in that woman way, I would get it and I would get assigned it to review. And I came back and I loved this movie and I gave it a very, very favorable review. And I remember Richard being like, oh, God, I don't want to have to go see that movie. But now that it's winning the box office every weekend, I suppose I have to go. And I thought, well, boy, you know, like what's the deal here? I mean, that you mentioned the Farrelly Brothers. I think it's actually a much more sophisticated comedy than the Farrelly Brothers, the typical Farrelly Brothers. But I hear you in terms of the bodily functions aspect of it. And I personally felt that was actually a step forward. And I know that's going to sound really weird to you, but let me argue it. For women to not be represented on screen as the dainty creatures that we are you know supposed to be within a certain segment of the male culture, I do think that's progress. For there to be a ridiculous scene involving a wedding dress, you know, in America where pretty much, you know, there's so many romantic comedies where somebody's in a wedding dress, but to see what happened in the middle of that street, you know, I laughed so hard.
I laughed as well.
I liked the movie too. You know, but there's no accounting for taste. I think the problem, and I think we all know this, is that there should be for every Bridesmaids, there should be, you know, 10 other dramatic or comedic or other kinds of films with female protagonists to choose from, so
that's very
Corey
true.
Lane doesn't have to go. Oh, wasn't her name Elaine? I think so. You know, doesn't have to say, oh, that was my only choice, because you should have more choices,
you
Elaine.
You should have more choices. And let's also say, there's, yeah. So how many hangovers have there been? There's one Bridesmaids. That really was a breakthrough movie.
Right.
In the meantime, I think you could easily come up with 15 movies just like it that feature just men.
All right, we're going to go now to Scott from Wyndham. Scott, thanks for holding on. Are you still there?
Yes, thanks.
Please go ahead.
I just wanted to say I think it's really cool that you guys are having this conversation. I just moved from Indiana, and they don't like talking about these kind of things around there, so it's nice hearing about this on the radio. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, was I remember seeing an article, I think it was an NPR article a little while ago, about book covers, book cover design, and about how book covers for books written by women tend to have a sort of more classically feminine design from the publishers than books by men of the exact same subject matter. And I think you kind of maybe see that too with movies. It seems like movies featuring strong female roles or by women directors or screenwriters are kind of treated the same way as maybe books in that regard. The other thing too, I think along with that, is that you were kind of mentioned earlier that director who had that movie, and she mentioned that it was difficult for her to get anything other than rom-coms. And, you know, I can't say I'm the biggest fan of the rom-com, but, you know, I can also say that, you know, if I were to see a movie in a genre, you know, something more dramatic that I'd enjoy, and it was, you know, two strong female roles talking to each other, passing the Bechdel test, I can't say that I would turn down a movie just based on that. So it would be nice to have the choice to see something other than a romantic comedy, you know, done by a woman or featuring women.
Well, there's some really interesting stuff in the Annenberg study about how women are portrayed in terms of professional professions, and the percentage of women shown to have certain types of professions are so small. So there's this, again, there's this really narrow, like what the caller is saying, there's this very narrow prescribed path that women characters have to walk, and It's too bad because everybody wants to see. Apparently, everybody wants to see these films.
But no, neither of us would ever tell you. You know, you can't go see that movie because it doesn't pass the Bechdel test. We're just saying that we'd like to see more that do. And to your point about the book covers, it's really kind of hilarious. There have been some exceptions recently, like Meg Wolitzer's The Interestings had a very gender neutral cover, very strong, bold, just sort of color stripes. Lily King, our Yarmouth novelist in Maine, her new book, Euphoria, has a very unisex kind of cover. But for a long time, we've been looking at the back of women's heads as they looked out wistfully over beaches, thinking about men.
Scott, thank you so much for calling. I do want to ask you a question if you're still there. Are you willing to take a test about a film?
Sure, maybe.
Okay. Are you familiar with the film Boogie Nights?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Okay, wait a minute. I won't ask you that one then. How about Social Network? The Story of Facebook. Didn't see that one?
No.
How about Her?
Her? When is that one from? I don't think I'm even familiar with that one.
That's this year. That's a new recent film.
Oh, I haven't been watching it.
Okay, well.
Rent that really soon.
Her. Yeah. All right, well. Thank you so much, Scott. Well, let's talk about Her for a second, because that's a recent... No?
Oops.
Mary, did you see it?
Oh,
I
yeah.
Seen it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I saw it.
It was very, very interesting. What did you think?
It made me uncomfortable. That film made me uncomfortable.
You mean the futuristic aspect of it? I should just say the plot of Her basically is we're not that far in the future in Los Angeles, and Joaquin Phoenix is playing someone who... loses his wife. Not, you know, she leaves him. And he develops a relationship with his computer operating system. Everybody has an individual operating system, and his is voiced by Scarlett Johansson, who starts as an utter innocent and tailors herself to him, and he falls in love with her, and they conduct what is supposed to be a real relationship.
In every sense of the word.
Yes.
Yes. And then she ends up leaving him.
She does, which is
spoilers.
A very... Yes, we did just spoil that. But you know what? That came out last December. It's okay to spoil, except for Scott, who does need to see it. But yes, and you know, I think sort of in the classic sort of Pygmalion sort of version of this tale, she would somehow spring to flesh and blood life. But instead, she moves on to relationships with, you know, some preposterous, like, I'm talking to 3.5789 million people right now, and they're all wonderful, and I love them all just as much as I loved you, Joaquin Phoenix. You know, that's what happens in that movie. It's
very weird. But here we should point out that Her does not pass the Bechdel test.
It does not.
Because she, Scarlett Johansson, is very focused on the conversation.
She's
would be about
essentially
men.
A mental prostitute. She gives him everything he wants to hear. She is formed by him in every way. It is a startling depiction of... Well, I'll stop there. It's a very interesting movie.
All right, we're going to go next to Chris from East Machias. Chris, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much for taking my call. And I'm going to have to say that I agree with both your guests. But I really did enjoy June Squibb in Nebraska. I thought her character was salty and blunt, and she added so much to that film. It's one of my favorite films from last year. And the favorite film I've seen so far this year is Locke with Tom Hardy. And there are two women in the film who play the wife and the girlfriend, but they're only voices. You don't even see them. You only hear them.
Hmm. What did you like so much about Nebraska?
I just felt it was a very down-to-earth story, and I do black and white film photography, so the fact that it was done black and white and set in the Midwest, I felt the cinematography was outstanding. And then just the storyline, it was just very simple about a father who essentially wanted to provide for his family, and you know, the wife thought he'd lost his mind, the son was just trying to help him out, make some peace, but I just felt it was just an exceptional film.
And she was Oscar nominated, June Squibb
really
was.
Felt she should have gotten it, but that's just my opinion.
Well, we could have a whole other discussion about what happens in the Best Supporting Actress category. Perhaps June Squibb was not old enough or young and pretty enough, because that's sort of the people that win that category.
Chris, were you familiar with the Bechdel test? Before the show?
No.
So would it be something you'd apply now when you watch a film?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling. There's a question, panelists, from Sarah on our Main Calling Facebook page, who asks, how about women-centered movies that are about more than women as mothers? She says, as a childless adult woman, I know that women are more than that. What do you think?
Yeah, it's so true.
We've got a lot of them at Blue Stocking.
Good. Yeah.
Films
everybody should go
with
see
women
Blue
other
Stocking.
Than mothers. Yes.
Yes, you sure, know, absolutely.
I'll put in a bid for, I'm just thinking about movies that I love that would fall into that category. And I think something like Please Give, which was directed by Nicole Holof Center.
Yeah. Oh.
And so she always, Catherine Keener is kind of her muse.
Oh, I
and
love that film.
Sometimes they are about motherhood. Like Lovely and Amazing is about motherhood and daughterhood, I think. But Please Give is really about a subject, you know, about charity and being decent to human beings, that just happens to feature a lot of women in a wonderful New York setting. And, you know, I think she does have a child, Catherine Keener's character.
I loved every bit of that movie. I could watch that movie again and again.
I do think that, you know, motherhood is sort of the automatic thing that when Hollywood does portray women, you know.
Well, there's the profession piece, too, I think. That's where we just get this really narrow scope. Of characters, and that just needs to be broadened. That needs to change.
Yeah.
Right. Turning now to Sarah from Auburn. Sarah, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. I just wanted to make a
comment. Oh, we lost you. Or we lost you on the phone there for a minute, Sarah. Could you speak into your phone?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Earlier, a caller made a comment about the movie Prize Winner. I think he was actually referring to the Prize Winner of Defiance, Ohio with Julianne Moore.
Thank you.
And I have not seen, I saw that film. It hasn't been for quite a while, so I may be wrong, but I think his conversation really highlighted one of the misunderstandings about the Bechdel test, which is that it doesn't test for the strength of a woman character, and there can be a strong lead woman character, and the movie still doesn't pass.
Right, like Gravity.
That movie, for example, I don't remember her having much connection with other women that was not centered around getting away from her husband or their husbands and that sort of thing. So a movie can have a strong female lead and not pass, or a movie can have a couple of, frankly, fairly weak, you know, female side characters and pass because they happen to discuss, you know, their dogs at the dog park. So,
yes,
like you mentioned earlier, I think it's important that when I think of the Bechdel test, you know, and I hear that a movie passes it, I think, all right, this has a shot at being a really interesting film, but it does not guarantee the strength of the women in the film or the feminist message of the film.
No, I think it sparks conversations about that, which I think is its absolute most important function.
And I think we should also say that it doesn't necessarily have to represent women as feminists, because although it may make you and me sad, not all women are feminists, and they have a right to be here too and be represented on screens. That's the truth of the matter.
Sarah, can I ask you a question about a movie? I'm just dying to ask one more of these quiz questions.
Sure. I can't guarantee I've seen it.
Okay, but... well, did you see Boogie Nights?
No, I did not.
Darn. Let me ask the panelists.
Okay,
what
you can
think
test
about,
me on
okay,
that.
Okay, test Boogie Nights. Pass or fail?
I don't think it passes.
It passes.
Really?
I thought it passes. Yeah.
Okay.
It passes because Roller Girl.
I think Roller Girl does.
Roller Girl asks Amber Waves to be her adopted mother.
Played by Julianne Moore. Yeah. Okay. That's the only scene, though? Is it one of those
things?
I think it's
like a kind of a one-liner little conversation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just between Amber Waves and Roller Girl.
You know, I'm wondering if something like Magnolia, another Paul Thomas Anderson movie that I love dearly, I'm wondering if that passes. It would probably be a small conversation.
Yeah.
Like that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Have to check the list.
All right, we have time for another call. This is Anne from Essex, Massachusetts. Go ahead, Anne. Hello, Anne. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I've been thinking about My Brilliant Career by the Australian director
Jane Campion.
That's right.
Yeah,
and someone who believes that marriage and being a writer are mutually exclusive careers and that she has to choose to be ruggedly individual, and she's not going to just do the conventional thing and marry the person she loves and have babies and do what all the ordinary women have done for centuries.
You know what? If Jane Campion were a man, she'd have made twice as many movies or maybe three times as many movies as she has.
Well, I know. It's probably the case. But there are plenty of women and men who manage to be married to people and whom they love and have children, and it's easier for men than it is for women. But
thank you for bringing up that movie.
Both of those things. I've also been thinking about Mud.
All right. Well, are just about out of time, Anne. But those are the panelists.
That was one of my mother's favorite movies, so I'm so glad she brought that up.
Well, that is a great place for us to wrap up the conversation. Thank you so much for the call, Anne. Kate, Mary, thank you both for joining us today. Kate Kaminsky is a screenwriter, director, and independent filmmaker whose films have screened all over the world. Kaminsky founded the Blue Stocking Film Series, which takes place next weekend. Mary Poles is a feature writer for the Portland Press Herald and Maine Today. She's a former movie and book critic for Time and the author of Accidentally on Purpose. John Keimel ran the board today, and we had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcasts by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcasts on iTunes. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith. And a reminder, the next Maine Calling Book Club will be held on July 31st. We'll be discussing R.J. Palacio's Wonder. It's the story of Augie, a 10-year-old boy born with severe facial deformities, who, after being homeschooled, insists on going to public school for fifth grade. A New York Times bestseller, Wonder is about kindness and bullying, cruelty, and community. In the end, it's an uplifting story that millions young and old have embraced, and we hope you join us for a discussion of Wonder on July 31st. I'm Susan Sharon, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.